This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, what's up, Geekscapists? Welcome to a brand new Geekscape podcast. This is the Loki Season 1 special. I'm Jonathan London, your host. And if this is your first Geekscape, well, saddle up. I hope you watched Loki Season 1 because we're about to spoil the hell out of it. And I'm not doing this by myself. My good buddy Ian Kerner is joining me here in a bit to spoil it with you and with me for you. He is the encyclopedic knowledge of all that is comic books. I mean, just try and stump him. You can't do it. I mean, I try and stump them. I try and throw them questions like, what's the origin of that story? Where did they first appear? And Ian does a pretty good job of answering every single question pretty accurately. So the dude is very impressive. We got a great amount of feedback on the Black Widow special we just did. That was a week or two ago about that film. And Ian was just on another level on that one. I know we were supposed to be talking about Black Widow, but he started talking about the MCU developing Dark Avengers, led into a discussion of who we might see in some future films like Shang-Chi, what that might mean for Hawkeye or some of the Disney Plus offerings. We haven't even seen anything from except maybe some leaked set photos. We followed that up with like how the Eternals will work its way into this and what that means for maybe the next phase. And when I get Ian going, there's no telling where he'll take the conversation. So strap yourselves up for this one. We're going to be talking all of season one of Loki, the 6-part series that was on Disney Plus, and it wrapped up last week. We could have had the show earlier, but we had Geekscape 600. That was great. 600 official episodes of Geekscape. Thank you so much for watching that. That meant a lot to me. And we did it as a 4-hour live stream, telling you to go out and get registered as a blood donor. Go donate blood. That was the theme of the big episode 600. We had doctors and all sorts of people on the show. That was in memory of our late friend Chris Ellis, who was a Geekscapist from the very beginning. And that was pretty awesome. And it also wiped me out the entire weekend. I had a pretty chill weekend. Just played, I think, Dragon Quest 11 on the Switch for most of the weekend. Did some work, but after the celebration that was Geekscape 600 that you were a part of, the weekend was pretty pretty chill. So let's unchill things. Let's talk Loki Season 1. You've had plenty of time to think about the things that happened in the season, what they mean for the Marvel Universe. We've got the comments started up on YouTube, Twitch, and Facebook. So let's get ready for this. And we've already have our first comment, so we might need to bring Ian in. Ian, let me know that you're ready, because you know what? They're not waiting for you. They're just already bringing comments for you. They're ready. So Ian, this is the Loki Geekscape special. But before we do that, we got some unfinished business from the Black Widow special.
Uh-oh.
Matt Kelly says, listen, Last time Ian was on, it was discussed that if Red Guardian really fought Cap, do you think it's possible Cap jumping back in the past actually allowed that to happen? At the end of Endgame, Cap jumps into the past. Did that allow for him to fight Red Guardian?
You know, it's such an interesting thing. There's been so much debate back and forth, even from the filmmakers, about what happened with Cap going back in time, whether it's a different reality or whether it's the reality that always happened. You know, and that's honestly, I think that the nature of that debate gets into the nature of whether or not there's a multiverse, right?
So yeah, here's where it gets tricky. Sure.
As of Endgame, I would say there wasn't a multiverse prior to Loki episode 6.
And so, the Ancient One said as much to Bruce Banner, said, listen, like, you have to bring these stones back to this timeline to get rid of these variants.
Right. Episode 1, we're told that, well, what about what the Avengers did? Well, that's supposed to happen. Now, let's think about what that means. So you see, I'm turning this actually into a Loki conversation.
Okay.
When they say that's what's supposed to happen, okay, what they mean is the timeline that He Who Remains in Loki has pruned to make the timeline that he wants to exist. This is the timeline that things all happen and turn out the way he wants, for whatever those reasons are. You know, all along, all the way down to the end of time, he wants this timeline to be the timeline. And in that timeline, the, let's call them hijinks of the Avengers and time travel, are part of that.
Yes.
That stuff's supposed to happen for that to work out. I mean, it's always a mind fuck to think about time travel and, you know, things going back and forth. So now, within that, I think that actually would allow for the idea that Steve might have traveled back in time and had adventures that we don't know about or people didn't know about, but they actually counted and it was supposed to happen. You know, it's tricky because you have to think immediately, how does he do that without messing up the timeline? And then the question becomes, well, here's a cheat of an answer that Steve couldn't know. He does it without messing up the timeline because the TVA is there to make sure he doesn't mess up the timeline.
Right. Maybe they went and pruned the Steve that was still hid in the ice when Steve went back.
Anything he does that would have affected the timeline, they prune that.
Yes.
The Steve in the ice goes through to become the Steve that goes back.
And Steve allows it to happen, even though there is some overlap of old Steve and awoken Steve.
That's right.
He just pretends, yeah.
Presumably, by the time you get to the point that Steve's awake, old Steve is almost as old Steve.
Sure.
So he's not active doing anything at that point.
Yes.
But to the extent that you have the TV...
He wasn't active at all. He just didn't become Captain America, or there would have been stories about him. So my answer to Matt is he didn't fight the Red Guardian because there would have been stories of Captain America, but he was just Steve Rogers.
Maybe.
The world went without a Captain America for that time.
Maybe. He certainly wasn't posing as the official Captain America working for the United States government.
He would have been a nomad?
It doesn't mean he wasn't doing covert missions and didn't come up against the Red Guardian. I think the Red Guardian is just telling stories and making shit up.
Sure.
Okay? That's what I think. Sure. But... And to be very clear, that's what I thought when I watched The Black Widow for the first time. But in light of Loki episode 6, I'm kind of rethinking that a little bit. Because what I'm saying is, in light of Loki episode 6, what we said from the very end of Endgame is, well, anything he did screws up the timeline, so, you know, how does it work? Now it suddenly works. Anything he does that screws things up, they fix.
Mm-hmm.
It either doesn't screw it up, and they literally have guides that show, because he did this, this branch happened. Now, here's the weird thing, is you start talking about the butterfly effect. And
come close to the mic, if you don't mind.
Anything he does should cause problems, right?
Yes.
You know, unless he's, you know, in an Armageddon Ragnarok situation, right? Anything he does should cause problems. But the bottom line is to the extent that they want that Steve Rogers to have gone back in time, have lived, live all the way through whatever other things he does while he's living that life, and then turn around and give his shield to Sam, to the extent that that is the reality that He Who Remains wants to happen, maybe they work overtime pruning things that Steve does. You know? Yeah. I mean, that's an explanation for how that works.
Steve
Frankly, it's the only one I've ever heard that works. Anything
Steve
else
has his own team cleaning up after him.
Seriously.
Garrett Briones is already starting in the chat. You have your new best friend here, Garrett. I think you and he are going to meet. He said he loves how the show Loki season one explored identity, learning to love yourself, literally, predestination, fate versus free will, and redemption. I agree. I think that the highlights for me, if we just want to start talking about Loki season one, that first episode.
I started minutes ago.
You started it. You are the one who remains because you started at the end. It came forward. Now we work our way back in the loop.
I worked episode one in there.
Yeah. So episode one to me was like the most fun episode before episode five. Episode five will go down as the like episode that delivered what I believed this show promised from the beginning was wacky hijinks, Loki multiverse, a go-go stuff where we see multiple versions of Loki. It's insane. And that's what episode five was. The promise of episode one was we suddenly got this Douglas Adams style look at the MCU that was so much fun. And I loved it. Episode two slowed a bit. And you have the sequence at the end with the supermarket. I really think that a lot of episode two was, hey, this other Loki, who is it? And we know that it's female Loki by the end of it. Episode three, how do you make that not, like, that was the one that really ground to a halt for me. It was, you know, you have a planet crash, a moon or something crashing into a planet, yet it was so drenched in dialogue and I felt like they did some things to contradict Loki and
you know what's
Sylvie.
Interesting is episode three is actually very short.
Yes, and it just felt the longest because it was talking on a train and suddenly they can't shapeshift to hide themselves on a train or do different things.
I definitely thought it was a low point. I thought that it was a bit actiony with, you know, them squaring off against each other. Listen, for the sake of what the story was, it was important.
And then episode four, which started things rolling back, especially in those last 10 minutes, where you're like, okay, now things are starting to we're really going to question what you thought about this show. When you start to see Mobius get pruned and then you see Loki get pruned.
Yeah.
And obviously the reveal
really
that there are no
late
time keepers.
In the episode, you know, but I actually like that whole episode four.
Yeah. Episode four starts to, for me, get that thing rolling again.
Yeah, I came off three not even feeling as excited anymore. You know, I was like, okay, let's see where this is going.
Which is crazy because that long take that they used to end episode three was really pretty impressive.
Yeah.
It was like a very long shot. It was super cool. There was a lot of choreography to it, a lot of effects to it. I was into it.
Yeah.
But
I really liked four. Yeah. I loved five.
Five, to me, was the highlight. And the promise of five in the end credit scene from four was the one where I really wanted to text you and say, I think we texted Justin and said, Justin, just make sure to sit through the credits because you're going to love it. And five delivered that promise that end credit. Six, I think I texted you. Usually Geekscapists, Ian and I try not to reveal how we feel about things until we get in this episode. But I got to tell you, I knew Ian watched six at midnight. Our friend Justin jumped on it. I started watching six not much later than Justin did, but very quickly sent them a text that said, I'm just smiling ear to ear because Jonathan Masters we knew was cast for Quantumania, Ant-Man and the Wasp 3. We knew that he was going to be in Quantumania. We knew that he was going to play Kang. And Ian had said, up and down the Black Widow special, Kang's going to be in episode 6 of Loki. Kang's going to be in episode 6 of Loki. And I said, nah, just doesn't seem like Marvel's style to put like a big cameo in the sixth episode of these series. They want the characters to shine on their own. I think that episode six had the big cameo, had the big reveal, had the big setup for what we're going to get, and did an amazing job of having Loki and Sylvie satisfied and explored. The only thing I missed in episode six was Dr. Doom should have been sitting at the table talking with them because that villain conversation was everything that I wanted from the conversations in episode three, but didn't feel it had the momentum. Episode six, I loved it.
What's interesting to me about episode six, and I watched it a second time with my stepson, is I it seems like, as far as what people are saying out there, it's a mixed bag. People love it or hate it. It's a lot of exposition that, you know, you really need to be on board for.
And that's episode 3 you're talking about?
No, I'm talking about episode 6.
Episode 6, yeah. But yeah. Come on, they did such a great job.
Well, but that's just it. It's like, if you're on board for Jonathan Majors doing what he does and his quirkiness and you're fascinated by and all that, you know, and it really is. I mean, it's kind of, you know, they're dealing with some very heady concepts here, right? Mm-hmm. Of what it's going to be and what's going to happen. But, I mean, for the sake of the story and giving the choice and getting into the stuff about trust and motivation, you know, I thought he did a phenomenal job, and it really brought the whole series together, you know, both Loki and Sylvie.
Yes. Andy Rattinger, who I love, is in the chat saying, Loki barely said anything. I like the idea, but it was exposition castle for that final episode. But I think that it was we got these two characters. They've been exploring whether or not to trust each other, but not just trust each other, trust the world around them. Sylvie does not trust the world. She has been living in hiding the entire time. Loki, for the
most part. Her entire life.
Loki, for the most part, only trusts a world that he can control. But then he meets the TVA and he realizes he's not really in control of anything. The second, which goes back to when the TVA agent opens the drawer and there are power stones in there. There are infinity stones in there. And Loki suddenly realizes, I'm not in control of anything. Not only that, Mobius shows him his entire life and then death. And he realizes he's a variant. He's not in control. That conversation at the end was Loki understanding that, like, he has to probably trust that this version of Kang, we'll call him Kang, but he's maybe more closer to Immortus.
Closer to Immortus, going by like, He Remains, which is a whole other character, but related.
I think in that conversation, why I liked it, for someone who's like, Loki was just didn't say anything, I don't know about that, but Sylvie's slipping away from him.
Yeah.
And he's watching Sylvie slip away from him, and I watched that last episode, and to me, I'm watching this guy who has gone through this experience very quickly, and I love episode 1 because it so quickly caught Loki up to where he was before Thanos or snaps his neck in Infinity War.
Well, here's the thing. It showed it to him, and you have to, and I think, I'm glad you brought that up because I want to speak about the episode 6, the villain conversation, but that's a good entry point.
And as Garrett says, Loki not saying anything actually says a lot.
It does, but you know, because the trick is, I feel like we need to remember that, you know, coming off of Avengers, the first Avengers, I mean, Loki's definitively the bad guy. He's killed all kinds of people, right? And I'm every bit as guilty as anyone else of the, oh, Loki's redeemed, we like Loki, I was excited for this show, you know? But he, for his, fine, he's a god, other people are beneath him. I mean, you can, if you want to accept it for the sake of what the morality is, you know, I mean, he changes motivation, you know? The whole idea of the redemption arc, you know, has been around them. Certainly, you know, so many stories. The gunslinger, you know, archetype, what have you. I mean, I've always thought Xena did it great, where she was this crazy, bloodthirsty person who killed all kinds of people. And she can never, you know, make up, you know, the ledger's, you know, too thick. But she's going to keep striving to do it, right? So I really like, you know, Loki taking, you know, heroes maybe strong a step, but trying to do the right thing. You know, I like the idea of Loki recognizing that, you know, through looking at the TVA files and where he's at and where he ends, makes his end, we're seeing what happens to his mother, which is a big motivating thing for him. And ultimately, and I think it was a very clever thing, for having him for the first time ever truly loving someone else and feeling he can have something like that, and that motivating him to be more than he's ever been and to really look at what his motivations are. You know, I think I love that that happens. But I loved in episode 6 that he remains still questions like, you know, I mean, you're the villain. You know, great. And right now you're doing the right thing, but it doesn't change the other things you've done. I mean, all of us, you know, we all have, you know, these things in our past. You know, all of us, meaning, you know, Loki, Sylvie, and he remains, have done a lot of really bad things. You know, as for Whether or not, you know, does that matter in the end? I mean, you know.
It gives them places to go.
Yeah.
Loki now has to, in some form, he's still a villain. He has to play a hero to the threat of the oncoming Kangs.
I mean, I think that's clearly where they're at,
yes.
Right?
And Sylvie has to... I mean, Sylvie really messed up. She pulled the plug that is going to create a giant spiraling shitstorm in the Marvel Universe.
But I think she knows she did. I think as soon as she does it, she's sitting there and she realizes she messed up.
Yeah, and that is the best version of Kang that we saw.
Yes.
It's going to get worse, way worse.
Which, mind you, is Immortus is that version of Kang that evolves out of the conquering and looks down on that past version of himself. You know, where it always gets confusing is, in this, they're straight up saying, look, it's variants, it's different universes. As opposed to the notion that Immortus, or even He Who Remains, used to be Kang. You know, and that's the question. Did he used to straight up be Kang, or was he a version of the same individual, you know,
later on,
that just went to a different place, that never was the Conqueror? You know, that's a little unclear, right?
Mm-hmm.
He certainly has the abilities. He took Eliath and wiped everyone out.
Yeah, I'm guessing that he had to prune other Kangs.
But he had to. He did. He pruned everybody.
And he had to do it ruthlessly, knowing what they would end up. Right. He had to have experienced the mercilessness of those Kangs to get to where he was, to understand the threat, to set up the TVA, to set up the fake timekeepers.
Right.
He had to have been ruthless himself. I don't think that he ever lived a life of peace. I think he lived a life of peace right up until discovering the multiverse, being threatened by it, and then realizing he had to be the one that became the top dog.
And even looking at Sylvie's story, it's cold-blooded.
Yes.
I mean, there's a lot of bad with the quote-unquote good, right?
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, and the ultimate argument is, I mean, you know, is his argument, I think, is just that, look, if there isn't only one universe, then it's all going to lead to no universe. So therefore, let's kill untold, I mean, trillions, quintillions, whatever number you want to use. I mean, it's literally pruning. I mean, before there were all these multiverses, and now he broke it down to just one universe. I mean,
including Sylvie's, and that's why she can't forgive him.
Right.
It still creates a tragedy. I want to ask you about Sylvie, because she's enchanting things. She's Loki's variant. Which, when he learns to love, let's just keep in mind how shaded that love is, because it is definitely a love of self. Is Sylvie the actual, like, Marvel version, the MCU version of the Enchantress? That's something that, like, we haven't called her that.
So the answer is probably yes, but when we say that, you know, here's the thing. And I love the play that, you know, it just so happens Loki and Enchantress also both were always wore green.
Yes.
You know, and so, you know, and the show, obviously, you know, from the get-go and the Marvel emblem in it is that green. I think it was, you know, the MCU always does a nod to things in the comics and they do their own take on it. So we've never seen an Amora among the Asgardians. In the comics, there's a point, and I think it's worthwhile to maybe talk about what Ragnarok means, both in mythology and the comics. Just for a second. So,
okay. And I want you to tell us Sylvie's 616.
Yeah, I'm going to go there. So,
okay.
So you have, in Norse mythology, Ragnarok's supposed to be the twilight of the gods, the end, Armageddon, mm-hmm. right? And over the years of the Thor comic, they went there a number of times. And it always would seemingly work out afterwards. And the last time they went there in the comics, they actually had them lose. And seemingly all die. And then, instead of having a Thor book, they restart a Journey into Mystery, which was the original comic that Thor first appeared in issue 83, and Loki, I think, was in issue 85. And eventually they turned that into the Thor book. But they restarted the Journey into Mystery numbering, so they turned Thor into, instead of, I think it was 501 or 502, mm-hmm. you know, it became Journey into Mystery again. And what they did is, they resurrected the Asgardians on Earth.
You're talking about the Oklahoma storyline?
Yeah. Yes, but they weren't all in Oklahoma. So
this is post-Snake, yes.
Post-Serpent, yes. Yes, but they weren't all in Oklahoma.
Right.
Because Loki was female. And elsewhere. And they had to be reawakened and all that. So, around that time, they introduced a Sylvie character who it turned out was someone that Loki created, but came out of Broxton,
mm-hmm.
and was saying she was the Enchantress and had some similar powers and all that. And ultimately, it turned out she went by the Enchantress, but she was never actually Amora. And Amora, I mean, most recently, Amora like banished her somewhere. So she was never the real Enchantress, but she was a character named Sylvie who went by the Enchantress. So it's definitely an Easter egg nod toward the Enchantress. She's enchanting things. She is the green motif. I think it's likely, to the extent that she's going by Sylvie and she needs a code name, I think it's likely that that's where she'd end up. Now, the question then becomes, why would she need a code name and where is she going to end up? I think, in keeping with, and I think I referenced this in Black Widow, I think that where they're going to a, you know, sort of Dark Avengers, Thunderbolts kind of thing. And that's a place that, you know, a place she could end up if she ends up on Earth in the present.
So she's the Thor equivalent on a Dark Avenger team.
Yeah, the Asgardian. Mm-hmm. And anyway, that's where I think they're going with that. I think that makes some sense.
That's post Loki season 2.
I think that would definitely fall post Loki season 2. We don't have an air date on that. I think it's safe to say we'll get that in 2022.
That's next year, Ian.
Yeah, well, hear me out, because what becomes interesting here is, so we know, I mean, listen, we knew going into this show that Alter the Multiverse was going to be there afterwards, because we have pretty good reason to believe in Spider-Man No Way Home that we're dealing with the multiverse. I mean,
yes.
We know definitively that Alfred Molina, who played Doc Ock in Sam Raimi's trilogy, the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man, you know, that he's going to show up in this coming movie. And we've heard that Jamie Foxx's Electro, who character he played in the Andrew Garfield movies, right?
Yes.
So, you know, of course they could just be, you know, reusing the cast, but no, I don't think so. I think they're literally going to be pulling from the multiverse.
Yes.
And there's rumors that we're actually going to see Garfield and Maguire. Now...
And Charlie Cox.
Yeah, well, the Charlie Cox is...
Technically MCU, right. Yeah, he's technically already in that universe.
I don't think that's a multiverse thing, and I think that the way they're going to do this is they're just going to embrace the casting. And I think what I've heard is, I've just heard Matt Murdock. I've not heard of him suiting up as Daredevil.
Sure. That is what I've heard as well. Yeah, let's give it a soft opening to those Netflix characters coming back. Okay, so we have this Dark Avengers team, and Sylvie would possibly be a part of it. Garrett says, I don't know, Ian, I could be wrong, but I feel like Sylvie is too high up on the MCU totem pole at the moment to join the Dark Avengers Dark Avengers Thunderbolts. I don't know, man. You could say the same thing about the literal replacement for Black Widow.
Yeah, Yelena, absolutely.
You could say the same thing for what I believe Zemo's going to end up. I mean, Daniel Brühl's probably the biggest star of all of them.
Let's be clear.
Going to end up on the Thunderbolts team, probably.
Yeah, by the way, let's be clear. When you say high up on the totem pole, well, we're not talking about, you know, episodic versus features, because there's no distinction anymore.
No.
Right? That's first of all. And second of all, I mean, is the feeling that she's not going to be in a team because she's too big a deal? I mean, I don't know. It worked in the Avengers when everyone that led movies of their own were then part of an ensemble. So it's the same thing.
Yeah. Here's the rumor. While you say 2022, we might see a Loki too. I've heard that, like...
It's not going to be longer than that.
No. Is there a rumor that they shot these things back to back?
I have not heard that. I'm not saying it's not true. I haven't looked into it.
That at least portions of Loki 2 were shot at the same time.
It's certainly possible.
Kate Aaron, the director of Loki season 1, is not directing Loki season 2.
Yes, but she's also indicated that she didn't have an expectation of there being one.
Okay.
She doesn't quite come out and say, she kind of implies that.
Yeah.
That it was kind of a surprise to her. So that says to me that they didn't shoot it yet.
Garrett is just coming at you, Ian. He wants that title. He says, wait, why would she be involved with a government-sanctioned team while literally unleashing the multiverse? Thor was on a team that had Nick Fury. Thunderbolt Ross put the Avengers together.
We're just speculating on what might happen down the line, because we're just looking for the analogs.
You can put anybody in. If she doesn't join Throg, will. So.
Yeah, and to be clear, that's why it's not happening before Loki season 2. But by the way, that team, wherever they're building... is not coming for another, you know, couple of years.
Right.
Okay. Like we're getting snippets. Like the next snippet is likely in Hawkeye, which will be at the end of the year, and all, and that'll be Yelena, you know, probably squaring off on him in some way, and with a little bit of manipulation from, you know, Valentina.
I'm going to say that the next snippet is actually the Abomination at the end of Shang-Chi or at the end of the She-Hulk series.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. It might be that we have him there and then he's in She-Hulk, but yeah, exactly. I think they're building these analogs, and this is a clear analog, and I think it's something that will be, that will show her stepping out on her own as opposed to being tied up with Loki. Mm-hmm. You know, so season two of Loki, she's still in that. That's going to be before anything like that. I just think that that's where we're leading, and we're probably a couple of years away from it.
I knew that there was going to be a second season. I'll tell you this why. We did not get to see Mobius on a jet ski.
There you go.
We were not going to end the Loki storyline independently of the films without Mobius being on a jet ski. I just didn't think that that would have been cold, dude.
Yeah.
If he'd gotten pruned without being on a jet ski, we need to see Mobius on a jet ski. I think I'm kind of joking, but I think I'm actually being pretty serious.
Yeah, I think you are. I think you mean it.
That being said, what is, this is going to open up a can of worms, but what do we actually get with a, with the next iteration of this collapse into the multiverse that we saw at the end of episode six? Because, Ian, we've heard, I mean, obviously we knew that Jonathan Majors was cast as Kang in Quantumania, but that's an Ant-Man Wasp film. We've got a pretty serious multiverse movie coming up pretty soon in February with Doctor Strange 2.
Right.
How do we avoid having a Kang moment in Doctor Strange 2?
Well, here's the thing. Maybe we get one, but we don't have to. All we know right now is now there's a multiverse. It doesn't mean that anyone dealing with the multiverse necessarily deals with Kang.
Okay.
It's just that it exists now, whereas before this series, we have every reason to believe that the MCU that we'd been watching had the multiverse eliminated from it.
Mm-hmm.
So now I think the notion of the multiverse of madness is now Doctor Strange suddenly has to deal with this, whereas he didn't have to deal with that so much before. Now, look, we knew that there were other, you know, realities above, below our own within Doctor Strange. Dormammu was in another reality. Mm-hmm. So like my feeling prior to this was the multiverse already existed, but, you know, maybe this thing otherwise. And by the way, that's another thing. The multiverse did exist before. There was a previous multiversal war. And then the way that He Who Remains ended it was to use Alioth to prune those other universes. But they did exist before. Mm-hmm. So the question is it that now new multiverses are coming to being? Or is it multiverses that existed before are coming back into being?
I think once you prune it, it's gone, Ian.
But remember, with the pruning, it's not like, hey, here's this moment, and then after this moment, now it starts. It's throughout time, because time isn't linear.
Okay.
Literally, the TVA has to travel
so
throughout time.
So it reattaches.
Time. Yeah, so it, for instance, it's not necessarily a reattachment. You could say it's a brand new one.
Draw a picture.
It doesn't matter, because...
Draw a picture.
The point is that it can start from any when.
Yes.
From any time, right?
So, okay, so look, you got this, you got the Marvel 616, and then you got another one, and it gets pruned. You're saying there's an interruption in that timeline, and then it reattaches itself and starts again later down.
Well, no, I'm saying, so 616 keeps going, but the thing is, so fine, you have 616, which is the comic universe, right?
Yes.
But the interruption isn't just, look, they're at the end of time.
Right.
You know, in that episode of Loki. So, you know, we're seeing new multiverses being formed, but first of all, what we're looking at, we don't necessarily know when that is. It's not like it's happening at the end of time.
Yeah, it could be happening
it's
before
happening
that.
Anywhere, right?
So it could be happening long before any of this.
Yeah, which is why and how you could have crazy different variants. Like, you know,
like
alligator
Loki,
you know, I mean, whatever.
Caveman
Loki. Yeah, so you mentioned
caveman, yes.
So you mentioned Throg. So notwithstanding that we know from the comics, but they actually reference in Ragnarok, in Loki's little play, the time that he turned Thor into a frog.
Yes.
Which, you know, the inference is that that was a real thing that happened in the MCU. We just didn't see it. okay? Odds are it happened, you know, long before the Thor movie, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe not. Maybe it happened in between movies. We don't know. You know, well, probably not, because Loki shouldn't have been around. So it happened before. But the point is that Throg existing, particularly as a variant, implies that there's a moment where he was actually going to go off and be Throg for a while. So they pruned that.
And that is the Throg that we see trying to fight his way out of a bottle. Or
trying, you know, to get to Mjolnir.
Trying to get to Mjolnir. But, okay, so explain Throg to me.
So, in the comics...
Really for the audience.
In the comics, initially, Loki turned Thor into a frog, and he was still worthy, and he grabbed Mjolnir, and it became Throg, you know, Frog of Thunder. Because Marvel liked the idea of him so much, they weren't going to keep Thor a frog. After they turned him back, they actually had... someone named Simon Walterson, a take on Walter Simonson, the Thor creator, basically get turned into a frog and find a sliver of Mjolnir. And so
that's the Throg we have, yeah.
He's the Throg that we still have.
Did you watch? Did you read last week's Thor issue?
Yes.
Thor, the first page, I open it up, there's Throg partying in Asgard with all the Asgardians.
Yes.
Super happy about that. And Richard Allen Roy said something. He brings up something that I definitely picked up on. I think you picked up on it too. The episode opens with Sylvie and Loki approaching the castle at the end of time or whatever it is. And they're actually like approaching it to Steve and Peggy's music with the dancing at the end of Endgame. Or when the Marvel credits are rolling through, that's the music that Steve and Peggy are dancing to.
But actually, the whole, all of the credits played snippets from things we've heard before from the MCU.
Yeah, we heard some.
They're saying that it's, I took it as symbolism that everything's kind of congealing and going off in different directions. And, you know, it's just all these moments. It's all, this is the end of time, but it's all a tapestry.
And we're talking about the Marvel logo when it's coming in. Yeah. Yes. I definitely picked up on the Steve and Peggy music. And then I think you hear this Black Widow or Scarlet Witch, somebody call out. You hear something. You hear a lot of different things. Yeah, you definitely hear on the left.
Yep.
And all that stuff.
Yeah.
So will we get more Throg? Can we see Throg and like a god of? I mean, here's the thing: we're getting Love of Thunder or Love and Thunder, and Love and Thunder, Thor. I'm telling you the thing. I say here's the thing first. So I have to tell you the thing before you counter with what you believe the thing to be. You can't counter a here's the thing with what you believe the thing to be without establishing the thing. We could be talking about the same thing, Ian. Okay,
that's not to the end of the phase, Jonathan. Most things to the end of this phase.
Yeah, you are about to create a nexus event when two things that you believe to be the thing meet. It might be the new thing.
So two things meeting the multiverse is happening.
It's already happening.
We have to get the Fantastic Four movie before two things meet?
Oh, man. So... the one thing we haven't talked about on the Multiverse of Madness, the Quantumania, and where Kang exists is that off with the Guardians, we're having Thor adventures with, and it's going to involve Roxxon, which you said was one of Sylvie's origins recently. But we get this Love and Thunder storyline, which, are we going to get a Thor 4 in a Thor movie that doesn't have Loki as a part of it?
That's a big question, right? I mean, you would think that if he was there, they wouldn't have been able to keep that a secret. But, I mean, I certainly hope he shows up. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the question... look, here's another big question. He got thrown through that door, and now he's somewhere where, instead of the Time Masters, it's Kang. It's Kang's statue, and they don't know who he is.
Yeah, so this is a Kang that is potentially more... more involved with the TVA. He's directly involved with the TVA.
So he got thrown through a door, but just because Sylvie kills He Who Remains shouldn't necessarily change the universe they're in. So that says to me that he got thrown into a different universe.
Yes, because Mobius doesn't recognize him.
Right. So now we're looking at a tempad situation where it's like, he has to jump between time and universes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? My point being that the Loki that ended up surviving in Avengers at the end of Endgame that jumped isn't in the same universe as Thor, Love, and Thunder anymore.
Right. He's in some alternate universe where Mobius is working directly for Kang as they were working directly for the Time Lords. They're now directly working for Kang. All those statues are now Kang statues rather than Time Lord statues. So this is potentially a...
Time Lords or Doctor Who.
Time Master. So is that right? Now Loki's potentially in a multiverse that is, or a place where it's closer to whatever Scott Lang is going to deal with in Quantumania.
They could deal with totally different Kangs.
Too many Kangs. There's going to be Kangs everywhere.
Council of Kangs.
The Council of Kangs, which we want that Fantastic Four movie, but this whole thing introduced the Council of Reed idea, right? It's basically a bunch of Reed Richards finding the other versions of Reed Richards so they can have a council to counteract the multiverse of Council of Kangs, where Kang just wants to conquer, Reed just wants to protect.
What about the Council of
Ricks? There's no Reed Richards. The Council of what?
Council of Ricks.
Yeah. Wait, what's that?
Rick and Morty.
Oh, I haven't gotten that far. You love it.
Council of Ricks, buddy.
Gotta watch it. But
spoilers.
Let's see. Garrett Briones says, one of the Loki variants is possibly already there, is how I took it. You're talking about the Kang variant. Yes, the Kang variant is already there.
Yes, that's right. Loki got thrown into a universe where, because already it exists.
Where Kang is working directly at the top of the TVA in the same way the Time Masters were. So behind that door is probably a Kang at this point. Yeah. If there's a door similar to the one that Sylvie was trying to get through.
That's right.
At the end of episode 4, there's probably a Kang behind
that
door.
He's in a universe where the person pulling the strings didn't feel a need to act like it's someone else pulling the strings.
Yeah, he's pulling them directly. So Bolte has a Kang question. Where does Kang's power come from? I mean, he does seem to just be a dude. He can travel through time and see all that happens, but how does that actually negate the power of the Infinity Stones? How does he build his power?
That's a really good question. You know, I've thought a bit about, like, the time travel. They didn't really go here, but, you know, there's an Easter egg in Ant-Man and the Wasp where you see Chronopolis, right?
Mm-hmm. And that's one that... Peyton Reed brought that up as part of, like, his pitch for introducing the Fantastic Four, because you can see it barely... I mean, did you see it when you first were watching Ant-Man 2?
No.
Yeah, it was something like Peyton Reed brought it up and like they zoomed into it. And I was like, oh yeah, there's a little city over there.
Yeah.
And I only know it from the comics because Janet was lost there for like years and then it ended up being like in Central Park and she just stepped out of it and was like, okay, I'm done.
The question is, I went into episode 6 going, okay, looking at it, you know, the kind of purplish thing, like, was that city that we see in episode 6 the same city? Is it in the quantum realm? Which, from my perspective, that makes some sense. The Avengers used what would be considered primitive technology to Kang to travel, and you know they actually have to physically go through it, right? But by in 1,000 years, he can have technology that that was initially based on that. It makes it seem instantaneous, i.e. his temp head and the doors, right?
Mm-hmm.
Clearly, he has the ability to obviously jump so easily, which is similar to what they were doing, in episode 1, the punishment for Loki.
Keep in mind, the Avengers aren't the only ones who've done that. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. did it, too. They traveled the quantum realm to go back in time.
Yes.
So, Geekscape is...
Whether or not that counts.
It counts.
Look, it counts, Ian. The point
Agents
is...
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. counts. The only thing that doesn't count is Inhumans.
And what about the last season of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.? A little murky. But anyway. But the point is that, we're talking about where does he get the power? Where does he get the technology? I mean, I think that we already have the start of that power. Where does he have the computing power to keep track of all these different universes and all these things? I think the start of it comes from Ant-Man. I think the start of it comes from Henry Pym's research. That's the start of that.
The exploration in the quantum realm, which in the 33rd...
And utilizing the quantum realm.
So in the 33rd century, or 31st century, when the man who's at the time and whatever guy at the crosswalk...
Maybe Nathaniel Richards?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not maybe,
But the Immortus-like king that we met in episode 6, they're all from the 31st century, and they've all picked up on whatever the equivalent is, the derivative is, of Hank Pym's quantum realm exploration technology at that point. So those aren't powers. Those are technology. They're just technology that we can't fathom.
It's telling if, you know, that he would put that city in the quantum realm to view everything else, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, one of the things that bothered me in Ant-Man and the Wasp, particularly as it related to Endgame, is it didn't really make sense to me. Why does Janet Van Dyne age, but Scott doesn't, and it's instantaneous for him?
What?
So Scott Lang is in the quantum realm, yes, and he comes out, and five years have gone by, but instantaneous for him.
Yes.
Janet Van Dyne got stuck in the quantum realm, so I guess the argument
is she was stuck. But for a much longer time.
Well, she was stuck, so she had no way out. So I think the argument is that she just was physically there that long and aging. She could have stepped out a minute after she stepped in. She could have stepped out at a different point in time, but she didn't. So she actually aged by physically just being there that long.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the answer to that.
Because by your science, she should look like Grease 2, Michelle Pfeiffer.
Well, only if she just happened to come out, you know, a minute after she went in, you know. But the argument, I guess, is that if Scott can go in there and come out at any time, the time really happens there. It's just a question of when you step in and out. But you still are aging there. It seems to be the case.
Okay. So
it's tricky. Like, shouldn't he have been able to go in and grab her, you know?
But yeah. Well, Ian, we're going to be dealing with Kang for a while.
Mm-hmm.
At least through Ant-Man and the Wasp.
And very possibly different Kangs.
Different Kangs.
Which might get very messy. I think they probably won't make it that messy.
Yeah. Bolt T wants to know, though. What is the motivation for evil King the Conqueror? So you end up controlling everything. Do you just want worship?
Yeah.
Like, we know what Thanos wanted. What does evil Kang want? What Thanos wanted, but everywhere?
He's power hungry. Look, you know, I always took the Kang the Conqueror motive as he's Dr. Doom on steroids.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's Dr. Doom wants to rule the planet, and Kang wants to rule every iteration of time in the universe. And, you know, for years there was speculation that he was a descendant of Dr. Doom's.
Yeah, that's something.
Before they turned it into the Nathaniel Richards thing.
Pain in the ass to rule everything. Like, which is, I'm making a joke, but it sounds like the Immortus version that we had on episode 6 did find it as a pain in the butt to rule everything. Yeah. He's like, this is awful. Y'all can have it if you want it. I'm just over it.
And, you know, so let's talk about that for a bit. What did he want to happen?
I actually want you to explain the Nathaniel Richards connection, because a lot of people referenced it after episode 6.
It's murky, because for a while in the Fantastic Four book, they introduced Reed's father, okay, who was Nathaniel Richards, who traveled in time. They even brought him into a S.H.I.E.L.D. thing. But then they go and they say a thing like, you know, so at one point it seemed like they were implying that, but then they end up just saying that, oh, he might just be a descendant.
Yeah.
So it's just one of those murky things.
I think in the comics, if there's a character that runs long enough, they worked for S.H.I.E.L.D. sooner or later. Something happened where they were involved with S.H.I.E.L.D. Parker's parents, it's like Natasha Romanoff, like they ended up working with S.H.I.E.L.D.
Is it Leonardo da Vinci?
let's bring back. Let's
Howard
bring,
Stark.
They all ended up working for S.H.I.E.L.D. sooner or later. So,
or a version of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah. Andy had a good advice. He said, like, it'd be real creepy to hire a young actress to be Michael Douglas's wife. What would be more Hollywood than that, though?
Well, I was just going to say, you know, art imitating life.
Yeah, exactly. So, Ian, where do we go from here, man? Like, we still have this movie floating out there that I feel like it's floating out there that's disconnected from everything else. Which is the Eternals movie. Like, why did Marvel make this movie? Not that it's
why do you think it's disconnected?
Okay, so how does it connect with all this, you know? To quote
we've already talked about how, I mean, if they do it anything like the comic, that we're going to, you know, find out that Thanos is an offshoot of the Eternals.
Sure. But so we're past Thanos now. Why release the movie now?
I mean, look, why release the movie now? I think it's about having, you know, other IP to develop, you know, mm-hmm. if you want to be.
Well, that's the, yeah, I mean, that, but narratively, yeah. narratively. What can it tell us? Because here, I can ask that question, but we got a fantastic Black Widow movie that people could always yeah. argue, why would you release that now? But I thought the Black Widow movie was great now.
Yeah, you know, I feel like what you're asking me with that question is how does it fit in with the Kang of it? And that's making an assumption.
No,
clearly Kang's going to be a big part of things, you know, but you know, we speculated for a while what was going to come, what was going to be the big thing to build up to a la Thanos, you know, and there may be more than one big thing. It's entirely possible that they do Galactus before they resolve Kang,
sure.
you know, because Kang probably, I mean, even looking at Thanos, the Kang of it probably doesn't get resolved for three phases.
No, Kang just, he's a bug that you cannot squash.
Like, yeah, it's probably something that keeps popping up here and there for the next 10 years.
Every time you kill a Kang, there's more Kangs. Like,
there's more Kangs.
A big yeah. effing. What Sylvie did is the worst thing she could have, like anybody could have possibly done.
And I would think that if they want to go to this a secret world place, which I think they eventually would to resolve this, they probably don't do the Beyonder so much as they do a version of Kang, you know? Mm-hmm. Maybe they do. But
that's the original two Secret Wars. I think that they'll more likely do the most recent Secret War.
Right, and the incursion event and the whole thing, which is very much multiversal war.
Yes, you know? And ultimately the thing that might cure the Kang is the Doom. Dr. Doom can stop Kang.
Maybe.
There, you know, the thing that can stop Kang is Richards and Doom working together. Maybe I'm fantasizing now, as nerds do.
Let's address real quick the whole, because I had a friend that was really bothered by the idea of Infinity Stones being baubles in Loki and felt betrayed that the last 10 years didn't count for anything. I said, no, you're looking at it the wrong way. So first of all, you have to realize that in the comics, the idea of the Infinity Stones is, yeah, there are these powerful things in their universe. You take an Infinity Stone into a different universe, it doesn't have any power there.
Yes, it is. It's just a paperweight.
Right. So the idea then at the TVA was like, well, they're outside the universe. So, and there could be multiple ones of them because every time there's a variant and the stone's part of that variant universe, there's another one that they pruned. Mm-hmm. So it makes total sense. I think the visual of it was also just really powerful to make a statement that we're beyond that,
mm-hmm.
you know? So I thought it was actually pretty cool.
Yeah.
But it doesn't mean cosmic powers can't come into play here. You know, it doesn't mean that, you know, Kang versus Galactus is not a good day for Kang.
No, he just gets swallowed like real quickly.
Unless he manages to do some kind of time jump or universe jump quick enough to get away.
Yeah. No, Kang is still a man.
Still a man.
But
likewise, the Celestials. I think the Celestials are going to play a big part in the Eternals.
Okay.
And we've seen the head of the Celestial as nowhere in Guardians of the Galaxy, so we know that they exist.
That is kind of where I wanted you to start talking. Is you've got this.
Well, maybe you
got
to give me better prompts, Jonathan.
No. Listen, I'm just the thing is, if I tell you what I want you to say, Ian, then like the encyclopedic knowledge won't spill out. It'll be channeled.
I'm too contrary for you to tell me what you want.
It'll be channeled into my narrow scope of the Marvel Universe as opposed to your very wide breadth of the Marvel Universe. Richard Allen Roy says, hey, Kang could use a council of sorts to help him rule, except for the problem that Kang doesn't want to share. And that is the difference between the Council of Reed is, that's why the Council of Reed beats Kang every time, because they share good ideas and Kang does not want to share. Mark M. says, do you think the Fantastic Four movie will be the Infinity War endgame to the Kang saga?
Not even close.
No, since it seems to be a fractured timeline has affected every movie coming out before. Mark, I think what I was saying earlier is a more likely scenario where we end up getting a secret war type movie where Doom works to solve the Kang storyline.
Here's the thing. This is my hope, and this is a theory that makes sense to me for a lot of reasons. I hope and think we're going to get both the Fantastic Four and the Mutants by virtue of the multiverse, because that's a way to give them to us without it saying, oh,
they were here all along.
Yeah, because, I mean, as a comic fan, as an old school fan, I don't want like baby FF. I mean, it was already tricky with Spider-Man. The fact that Spider-Man was a teenager when he started, you know, they made it work. But, you know, but the idea of, you know, that Spider-Man not having been around for a long time,
sure,
you know, was troublesome. But for the FF and the X-Men to not have been around for a while, to just be like just starting out, that that's going to
especially when
me.
When Fury, et cetera, and all these resources know like the existence of the Kree and the Skrulls, chances are they know that there are mutants in their backyard too.
Right. Or they would, but, you know, but a multiverse is a way. And what I mean by that is you could bring them in via the multiverse, and then ultimately what's likely to happen is we're going to end up with the One Earth thing that more or less, I mean, it sort of happened after Secret War. Obviously, DC did it a little more definitively. Mm-hmm. But we're going to end up with a patchwork kind of world, ultimately, I think, where, you know, it's just going to be people who remember them having always been there.
Right.
I mean, listen, we've already seen, you know, several times, you know, done particularly well in the Ant-Man movies, where there were adventures before. You know, the fact that Hank Pym and Janet, you know, Van Dyne were Ant-Man and the Wasp in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just because people didn't know about it, they were. I mean, there have been, whether they called themselves the Avengers or not, these situations have already existed. And by the way, the comics have done that too. I mean, the comics did a 50s, you know, version of the Avengers, and most recently they've been doing the prehistoric Avengers, you know? So, you know, they do that, and even though no one knew about it, doesn't mean it didn't exist.
Yes, and you can tie that in because we already have Odin, who was a part of that team, and if we get the mutants, we probably get the Phoenix, which was a part of that team.
Sure.
And the Ghost Rider was a part of that team. And obviously the Aya Bagamoto was a part of that team as well.
Right, and you know, and Black Panther.
Black Panther was a part of that team, that spiritual area that he goes to in Black Panther, that lineage. Okay, so Garrett says, like, listen, the Eternals are being introduced now in the wake of the Infinity Saga and will factor in when they're needed. Yeah, I mean, they're not, I mean, are they gardeners of the of this experience? Are they gardeners of the Earth? What are they?
I think in the Eternals we're going to get a very big conversation about their decisions to not get involved. And I think there's going to be a big philosophical thing between certain characters there regarding, you know, whether they should or not. And then going forward, we've already seen in one of the trailers, right, that, you know, Icarus talking about how he can step in and lead the Avengers and they all laugh at him.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, clearly there's a motivation to be more involved. I mean, listen, you know, Black Knight classically is an Avenger,
mm-hmm.
as is Cersei. So right. I think that beyond Eternals, we're going to see that. You know, I've said this numerous times. I think where we're going is, look, there's no Avengers, new Avengers movie on the docket. And tellingly, I said new Avengers. I think what we're going to see is, I think we're going to see a version of Dark Avengers, kind of Thunderbolts kind of thing, come together, and then the Avengers are going to reform. A new Avengers are going to form to an answer to that. You know, and
Sam Wilson.
Yeah, and it's not necessarily that they're going to fight them so much as they're going to be an answer to them, you know, like a, hey, you know, this is not the right ideals. But yes, I think it's going to be Sam Wilson's Captain America who's going to lead the charge and bring an Avengers team together again.
Mm-hmm.
You know, who's going to be on it? I mean, you know, likely Winter Soldier, likely, you know, War Machine, who at that point might be Iron Patriot, you know, I mean, we'll see what name he's going by. You know, but, you know, something like that.
Bolte has the most important question for you, Ian. Do they recast Chris Evans as the Human Torch in the new Fantastic Four series?
Yes. Well, that's the thing is, I think they're recasting all of that.
No, Chris Evans as the Human Torch.
Well, he's saying recast. He was cast as the Human Torch.
Oh, no, I thought you meant bring Chris Evans back to the MCU, no. but as Johnny.
I mean, look, the joke is, if this was 10 years ago, you would definitely get Hugh Jackman as Wolverine and they would probably keep, mm-hmm. you know, all the casts. But now at this point, everything's getting recast.
Everything's got to get recast.
You know, but to your point, yes, I mean, in keeping with my theory, they easily could have just integrated off of what already exists in those other movies if they wanted to make them truly canon. And right. they do own that IP, but I don't think that's what they want to do because I think they just want to take their own spin on everything. So they don't want to be beholden to it.
It's been 20 years. It's time to do
this.
And
we're not counting the other one.
Yeah, they've done it three times already as with Spidey, so why not? And there's always a multiverse, so you can always have it.
They've arguably done it with the FF three times.
Exactly. Garrett says, if we're getting into the multiverse, we need Captain Britain and the Captain Britain Corps. We need it. He needs it, Ian.
I mean, yes and no. You know, one of the messy things is, you know, you have Saturnine and the Captain Britain Corps multiverse, but it always sort of feels like that's a different multiverse than you're dealing with elsewhere, right?
I agree.
You have Hickman's incursion event, but it doesn't really seem to deal with all those Captain Britain realities.
Right.
You know?
And I thought that things got really messy in the X-Books recently when you had that war between the Krakoa and Arakawa and all that stuff. And you were in the midst of it, there's that whole drama with the Captain Britain Corps and the tower. And I was like, okay, you added one too many things in this narrative and it's a little messy.
Well, I'll give them this to their credit and recognize that all that Captain Britain stuff is all the brainchild of Chris Claremont, who so much of the definitive X-Men stuff comes from, you know, and from the get-go with that conflict, they have Saturnine in the center of it. So it did sort of make sense that they did that and they went there. And they reestablished the Captain Britain Corps out of it. So to the extent that I feel like that was a great way for them to have used that crossover to actually affect, you know, something meaningful in the book and have that crossover have meant something. I think this is sort of a big tangent for the sake of people listening to an MCU podcast versus a comic book one. But you don't do those with me.
The X-Men, it's going to get pretty messy if we start introducing all this stuff, especially
early days of Geekscape when the one show we did, and we do a comic segment and we would talk about comic books. Now I have to throw a little comic book stuff into these because it's the only time it happens.
All right, I have a question for the Geekscapists and we'll wrap on it. We usually on Geekscape, but don't just do the Ian Kerner special. I usually have a guest and we talk about, you know, what they're working on, if they're working in movies, comics, video games, all that. Or we just talk news and reviews and all that stuff. Usually Katie is my co-host. Maybe we have some of the Geekscape hosts from the other podcasts on and we keep it family like we did Geekscape 600. Do y'all want me to work Ian into that rotation? Because Ian has a wife. He has a stepson. The other Geekscapists don't do that. Ian's pretty busy. But I will gladly work Ian into the rotation of the quote-unquote, as Dominic Toretto says, Geekscape family. I will work him into the Geekscape family rotation for that kind of stuff. But Ian, you're just a busy dude, man. Like, come on, man.
It just depends on timing, you know.
Okay.
I can do it every now and then.
All right. Because Bolt T says, anything for more comic book talk. So I'm down with that. Okay. And Garrett, you're getting the love here, Ian. I would like to hear more Ian. If he's up for it.
Sure, so, I'm up for it.
We love you, buddy. You know, and I'll tell you what, like, we had a fun Geekscape 600, but we launched this show years ago, just you and I, man.
Yeah, listen, I like the idea of talking comics because it makes you have to actually read them.
I read comics, I just don't read the DC stuff. Yeah. I picked up that DC Multiverse book, though, because it had Captain Carrot in it.
Yeah.
Couldn't pass that up. DC, you want my hard-earned dollar? Put some more Captain Carrot in your comics.
Right.
The Zoo Crew, and then you got Jonathan. All right, buddy. Loki season 2. We'll see what happens. But it sounds like trying to put a cap on a bottle that's just not going to get closed. You know, that's my prediction, and it will end with some version of a jet skiing Mobius, and that's all I can guarantee for season 2.
Maybe.
Anything else to add?
No, okay. I think that's it. I'm looking forward to it. I think it was definitely a cool way to end it. I hope it's sooner than later, but I mean, you know, what I wanted to say was, I think that we get Loki season 2 before we get Ant-Man and the Wasp of Quantumania. I think it's likely after Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness, and I think that makes sense because right now it is a mess.
Multiverse of Madness is February.
Right.
Yeah, and then if we get Loki sometime next year, we'll probably get it right before Quantumania, which is probably that February spot in 2023, or a spring spot. All right, Geekscapists, you can follow us. Geekscape is on Twitch, it's on YouTube, it's on Facebook. We have a Facebook page and a Facebook group called Geekscape Forever that you'll enjoy. We have more conversations like this. Ian's part of it. Come find us on Facebook and share that. You can follow Ian on Twitter at...
Ian L. Kerner.
Ian L. Kerner. You can follow me at Jonathan London on Twitter. If you want to email me about anything, it's jonathan@geekscape.net. We have tons of shows. We have a multiverse of our own. We have about 10 to 12 podcasts here at the Geekscape that's like comics. And we don't have a comic show. We have a video game show. We've got wrestling. We've got horror movies. We got all sorts of fun stuff. So look for Geekscape on any of your podcatchers. Subscribe. And if you like this episode, hit the share button. Share it with your friends. Please expand my king powers. Every time somebody listens to Jonathan, it's just another variant of Jonathan being heard in other people's ears. That is horrifying. Love you. Go out there and donate blood in memory of our friend Chris, late Geekscapist, who we lost in May. And for Ian Kerner, thank you for joining us. Geekscape forever. Don't hate, create. Bye.
Bye.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.